This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of. And we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream.
Be afraid.
Be very afraid. On Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Sci-fi and Scream for Wednesday the 19th, 2010. Thanks to Jade and David from Different Strokes. Thanks, guys. And on tonight's show, we have the special Empire Strikes Back episode, of course. And we'll be discussing everything from Wampa and Tauntaun, from ice planets to swampy satellites, and to new creatures that came onto the Star Wars horizon. The first appearance, of course, of the little green guy called Yoda. And we'll take some twists and turns none of us would have thought possible from the galaxy far, far away. I'll also be talking to our special guest on the phone, communicator Peter Jordan from the only unofficial Star Wars fan club and appreciation society called Starwalking. And of all things, a Celebration 5, we'll be chatting about that, the 30th anniversary of The Empire Strikes Back, which was released back on the 21st of May 1980. We'll also have the usual sci-fi and horror news wrap-up for the week. But first, before we go travelling light speed to far-off galaxies, I'm going to be interviewing playwright Declan Green, whose new play was premiered last Saturday, the 15th, at Melbourne's The Malthouse, and it runs from the 13th to the 30th of May. So a little bit of variety tonight, from inner mental spaces to intergalactic places on Sci-Fi and Scream. You're with Sonia and Kaz, your horror and science fiction show for the LGBTIQ community on Joy and only on 94.9. And welcome to the show, Declan Green.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That's great. Thanks for making it on the telephone there. That's excellent.
All the way.
And you're the playwright for the production Moth.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I wrote Moth.
Yep, great. Now, I was at the premiere, it was actually the world premiere of Moth at the Malthouse last Saturday, and I found it to be quite awesome, actually. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
If that's what you can call it, enjoying, I guess, it's such a seriously deep sort of topic. What can you tell us about the play, the story of behind the play, Moth?
Well, Moth is more or less the story of two outsiders named Sebastian and Clarissa, and they're both sort of supposed to be the kind of kid at high school who just slips through the cracks, like these very unromanticized sort of loser figures who don't really have any agency, particularly brilliant or smart or anything like that, and are just kind of endlessly harangued by everyone in the year, but like the kind of kids that really can't do anything right.
Yeah, they stand out a bit.
Yeah, exactly, and I think everybody kind of knew somebody like that when they were at high school. And
they may have been someone like that.
Yes, exactly. I guess the premise is that they have this very sort of uneasy friendship that's established through, you know, the desire to just not be alone. Mm. And then the rest of the play really just sort of charts the disintegration of their relationship through the onset of schizophrenia in, you know, one of the kids, Sebastian. He sort of loses his grip on reality in a very serious way and has quite tragic consequences.
Definitely. And how long did it take you to actually write and develop the play before it came to the stage?
Well, the play was a commission from Arena Theatre and the Malthouse. So the director, Chris Conn, actually came to me initially with the plot, or just really just with an image of... he wanted a play that was sort of a two-hander about religious ecstasy. And then from that, we sort of developed this very... intricate and kind of cross-referential network of influences and touchstones about sort of anime and death and Wicca emo culture, and it's kind of this, I guess, hopefully quite interesting sort of sprawl of ideas.
Yeah, definitely. So it's quite interesting. So it was actually the director that came up with the premise, so that's what it sounds like. What you're saying.
Well, that's right.
And then
he
you
came up
worked
the initial
on
thing, which is that it was going to be a play about a kid having a religious vision, and from there I kind of took that and then developed that in conversation with Chris, sort of developed the plot and the characters.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Now, the actors are amazing. Dylan Young, who plays Sebastian, and Sarah Ogden as Clarissa. They were a knockout, I thought, and it's a very highly physical performance for just two people to take on. The sweat was just pouring off Dylan's character, Sebastian.
Yeah, they both work unbelievably.
It's a workout, indeed.
Yeah.
Were you involved in...
It's a two-hander, and they have to play so many characters over the course of the play.
Yes, that's true. I was trying to keep count, but I finally got the hang of it. I think there was... Clarissa was Sebastian's mother at times. She was herself.
Right.
Sebastian was Clarissa's father, I believe.
The
moon character, which is a really interesting way of doing it. And it's such a physical performance they both were involved in. Now, were you involved in casting?
No, I wasn't involved in casting. That was something that Chris, the director, kind of oversaw. But that said, we did develop the play over 3 weeks last year where we had a different actor for each week. And Dylan was actually the very first person who played Sebastian. And we just thought he really sort of influenced the way that the character developed from that point.
Okay.
You know, because, he just had some really fantastic ideas about it. So I think that's why he fits so naturally into it. And then to Sarah's credit, she came into the project much later, and I think she's really a knockout. She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's incredible. So believable. She looks so emo, you know.
Well, she was actually a goth at high school.
Was she? She's just coming back on that, pulling up those memories. Now, I find it interesting, too, that there was a school in Melbourne that was involved in the working of some of the details with the dialogue and script to give it that authenticity.
Yeah.
What was the reason behind that? I mean, I can see the reason, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, Arena is a theatre company that their target audience is young people, and this play is for young people 15 and over.
Okay.
And the thing was... I guess the thing when you're playing to a young audience especially is, and one of the great things about playing to a younger audience is that if it's kind of not good and doesn't speak to them, they'll really just switch off. Like, they really don't have any sort of time for stuff that doesn't connect. So I guess that's why we worked with this high school, because we just really wanted to make sure the show was constantly appealing to young people. And also that, you know, especially when you see young people depicted on stage, because both our characters are supposed to be 15. Mm. So often it's just this really sort of twee, like Juno Glee version of, young outsiders, where they're like way too smart and kind of, you know.
Plastic. I find those characters quite plastic, but, you know, that's my opinion.
It's so romanticized.
Mm, it is, isn't it?
Being an outsider at high school is not this kind of twee little experience. It's actually devastating.
It's also grueling.
It's
so grueling to churn yourself through this institution.
Exactly.
That's what I found.
I think that was one of the lines we had in the play, which was about, you know, like these years, they say these are the best years of your life, but they're not. They go so slowly, you know.
They're revolting, let's face it. That's just my opinion. Now, to me, as I sat there, I was emotionally transported into the story, particularly the intensity and the anxiety and the emotions of the Oval. The scene in the Oval where we're not quite sure what's happening, but for me, it was like the ultimate most, you know, evil type of horror there is. And I mean, we're a horror and sci-fi show, so some people who might be listening thinking, well, what's this teenage angst got to do with horror? But real horror is often in real life, and particularly
absolutely.
bullying, and bullying is such an evil in society, I think, personally. And
absolutely. And the terror that it inspires,
the terror,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it is pure
it's just
white
revolting
terror.
Now, with that scene in the Oval, I did wonder if the spitting was actually something else. We're talking about something else there, were you? Or something that's similar to saliva? Or we?
Oh, no, for me. It was supposed to be fairly.
Sorry, but
literal.
It was feeling graphic to me.
Well, that's good. That's good.
No,
whatever horrifies you, that's fine.
That horrifies me, that thought of that. But yeah, that was the best scene. Oh, the worst scene, but the best scene, I think. And it really transported me anyway. And I think the audience was pretty silent when that was going on.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's really
too
good.
Close to home, I think. And just horrific what young people can do to other young people.
Well, I think maybe that's
age.
One of the reasons why it's kind of speaking to theatre audience as well. Mm. Because if you're into theatre, you're probably a bit of a geek in high school. So
yeah, something wrong with you. Now, are any of these scenes that were in the play, are they from any of your own experiences? Or anyone you know? Was that the influence?
Well, absolutely.
Or?
I mean, there was a kid at my school who was exactly like Sebastian, just as, you know, this kid who just couldn't do anything right, who kind of had bad BO and, you know, had an annoying laugh and, you know, laughed at their own jokes all the time and just was really clueless. And I think one of the things we kind of, Chris and I talked about as we were developing was that, you know, the fact that you know, this character was so relatable, both of them, that, you know, everybody who sort of came and saw the developments had a story about a Sebastian-type figure at their high school. Mm. So it just, you know, it just kind of spoke of this, you know, enormous kind of network of kind of lost boys and girls who just sort of slipped through the cracks, which I thought, is really tragic. And I think one of the other things about Sebastian's character is that what we really wanted to capture about bullying is that bullying, you know, so often when it's represented, it's just about, you know, somebody calling somebody else a drongo and punching them in the head, you know, when you see it in movies or on TV. And it's just not what it is. Like, true bullying is like the absolute erasure of somebody's identity and making them perform what you ascribe to them. Like, if you tell someone you're just the most annoying dickhead in the world, eventually that's what they'll become, and they'll start craving that attention. I think that is...
That is a tragedy, especially. Now, I loved the lighting effects, just looking at the play there, the minimal lighting effects, the great use of a simple, such a simple backdrop as well, with the underlay, carpet underlay as a backdrop. The sounds that we use, the cracking of glass, the popping of light bulbs, and the fluttering shadows of moths. Who came up with that effect?
Well, that was, you know, the show's pretty highly collaborative, so Rachel Burke was the fantastic lighting designer. I think she did a really amazing job. Yep. I mean, everybody sort of collaborated on the whole vision of the show, which is going to be very, like, very muted colours. Like, there was there's colour in the show at all. It's all kind of grey, like greys and whites. And I think everybody sort of, nobody really wanted to do anything kind of too flashy or hysterical with the design.
Yeah.
So, you know, the script is so dense in terms of just the language and the imagery that I think it would have been kind of overwhelming.
It would have taken away from the serious nature, and there is a serious nature, even though there's humour in there to start with anyway, but then after the scene in the Oval, it does change quite dramatically the whole mood of the piece, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, then that's when all the stuff about, you know, sort of Sebastian, the boy having to rescue the world, and the anime stuff all really kicks in.
And the mental delusions, I suppose you'd call it, delusions and illusions that he had. Now, with the Clarissa character, when she's going into the cave, she's going down in the cave from taking sleeping pills, basically what is happening there?
So I guess the whole thing in the play is that these, you know, they're two people who, you know, live in this very, very hostile and unforgiving world, and they both sort of devise their own way to escape that. So he kind of disappears into this world of, you know, sort of, I guess, religious fervor and, you know, psychosis. And she kind of withdraws more into herself. And I guess the cave is just sort of a safe place that she invents where she's kind of safe from the world, really.
Okay. Because I did wonder if she had actually taken her life. And so that's why she wasn't there.
Well, this is why I shouldn't just be telling you things. It's much more interesting if people interpret it their own way.
Yes, well, so I did wonder if that had happened, because we're right at the very last scene where he gets, you know, well, spoiler, but he gets, his life is taken, I presume.
Yeah.
Is that correct? And I had a feeling that she wasn't there, because she wasn't actually there, so it was quite...
Sure. It's all quite, I mean, that's the thing about the play anyway, the structure of it. You know, as it sort of gets more and more wound up in Sebastian's sort of psychotic state, the line between reality, unreality, and dream and fantasy all becomes very, very blurry anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think hopefully people can take away their own interpretation of the play.
Yep.
You know, always fantastic.
Oh, I hope so, of course. Now, what happens to Moth next? Is it going around Australia on tour, or...?
Well, next it's going to the Sydney Opera House.
Okay, excellent.
It's going there. It's got, a 2-week season there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we don't know. We're not sure what's going to happen with it. Hopefully, we'd really love to bring it back, because I think, you know, we've completely sold out the Melbourne season now.
Yeah, it's a great theatre atmosphere there at the Malthouse. It's very good.
It's a great space to use as well, the Tower. It's a very, very much loved space.
It is good. And importantly, what's happening to you next, Declan? Aftermath.
I'm just doing a bunch of stuff. I co-run a queer theatre company with my friend Ashley. We do kind of trashy John Waters style kind of trash theatre, which is very, very different from Moth. And we're actually doing a performance next week.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yeah. How can people find out about those sort of things that you do, and where can they go online?
Well, we've got a website called sistersgrimm.com.au.
Oh, okay.
And we always kind of post stuff there. But the thing we're performing at next week, we're actually making a claymation film to screen at a thing called Comfort Zones next week at Witches in Britches Theatre Restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are so busy. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, Declan, we'll probably finish it there, I think, and let you be. And thank you so much for talking to us on tonight's show on Sci-Fi and Scream. Yes, and good luck with the rest of Moth. It runs at the Malthouse Theatre at the Tower, isn't it?
That's right.
Until May the 30th.
That's right. There's no more tickets left.
No more tickets left. Oh, okay.
Sorry, completely sold out.
Fantastic. Oh.
But come to Sydney if you want to see it.
All right. So everybody, think about some time in Sydney where it's a bit warmer, perhaps, and catch it there if you can. Okay. Thanks. Thanks again, Declan.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. And that was Declan Green, playwright of Moth, talking about his play Moth and other things that he's getting involved in. It's a terrific play. It is very intense, and it's been sold out. So if you might get a chance to put a reserve in there, perhaps. And you've been listening to Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Now, we did mention the topic of suicide. So if there are people out there that need to talk about that or any situation like that, we have a contact number, and it's the Lifeline contact number. It's 131114. That's 131114. And like I said, you've been listening to Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream. With Kaz is here as well, but she's a bit quiet at the moment.
It's been a very busy show, so yeah, I haven't really had it. Getting back into the controls.
Getting back into, yeah, the hang of it. She has been away.
I have. But we're going to play some information, or we're going to play a clip from Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
Which is something we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Cool. It is a dark time for the Rebellion. Although the Death Star has been destroyed, Imperial troops have driven the Rebel forces from their hidden base and pursued them across the galaxy, evading the dreaded Imperial Starfleet. A group of freedom fighters, led by Luke Skywalker, have established a new secret base on the remote ice world of Hoth. The evil Lord Darth Vader, obsessed with finding young Skywalker, has dispatched thousands of remote probes into the far reaches of space. And so the opening crawl began. Back in 1980, and it's 30 years to the day almost, which will actually be this Friday, May the 21st, when Celebration 5, well, sorry, Number 5, which was Empire Strikes Back, in the trilogy, in this franchise series, I should say, of Star Wars, was released onto the world. And we will be talking very shortly to Peter Jordan, the director of an organisation called Starwalking. And they are believed to be the unofficial Star Wars appreciation group here in Australia, based in Victoria in Melbourne.
Lots of people have favourite quotes from this film. It's got some really great, great quotes. Did you have a favourite, Sonia?
That's a tough one. There's so many. But would you like me to get out and push? That's one. No, I'm seriously not giving you a hard time about your panelling.
No.
You've been away for a month. So
I have been away. I've been on my... Fair. On my teaching rounds for uni, so back in the land of the living now. I really like, of course, the classic I am your father, and the response that elicits from Luke. Oh, I love it. It's just...
Yeah. Can you do it?
No. God, no. And I would not insult fans of Empire by...
But I'm sure there are people out there that practice it regularly.
Even attempting it, yeah.
Hope, oh, God. Particularly this week.
It's the same people who do the Khan every time they hear... any reference to the Wrath of Khan.
Right.
Yeah.
We're talking Star Trek
there.
That
was a very bad Khan then, so my apologies for that. We are going to be back after these messages, and before we come back to you, we're going to play a little bit of the classic Imperial March from Empire.
It's a favourite.
It definitely is. So you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And now we have Peter Jordan on the phone line, and Peter is the director of an organisation that I mentioned before, Starwalking. Peter says that Starwalking is the longest-running unofficial Star Wars appreciation group in Australia. So welcome to tonight's special episode of Sci-Fi and Scream, Peter.
Thank you, Sonia. Thanks for having me on.
That's great. Look, this is our little tribute to the 30th anniversary of ESB, or Star Wars Number 5, as it's also known as. So we're trying our best.
We can't be that old, surely.
Oh, yeah, we are. Maybe not 800 years old, Yoda, but
sometimes
getting there.
I feel 800 years old.
Yeah, especially by Wednesday. So, Peter, how are you this evening?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
All been, good in the galaxy?
Yep.
Good.
Just, plodding along with life, but it's a very big year for Star Wars fans. It's been the 30th anniversary of Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And we all found out that Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father.
I know. The doppelganger, yes. And, yeah, a little bit of Joseph Campbell stuff in there, I say.
Yes, the hero of the
Very Freudian. That's the one. We can talk about that a bit later if you like. So tell us, firstly, about Starwalking and its affiliation with Lucasfilm in particular.
Yeah, well, Starwalking was created in 1988 and we've been going strong ever since. And, yes, we're the unofficial Star Wars fan club of Australia because the official fan club is actually based in America. So, but we do have ties within Lucasfilm. I'm on fairly good terms with the people in there, and from time to time I'll email the guys there just to get a bit of a heads up as to what's going on, and yeah.
So did they approach Starwalking here in Australia, or did you guys, you know, just form a relationship over the years somehow?
So the relationship was formed over the years. If there's a particular conundrum that someone's come up with here, I'll shoot an email off to Mount Olympus, and hopefully I'll get a response back saying that yes, we can do it, or no, we can't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you help out with maybe promoting or events that might be coming up in the States to do with the Star Wars franchise. Would that be?
Primarily what could happen out here, because, I mean, we're always hearing whispers and rumours about things that might be happening in Australia down the track, but until it happens, we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose.
Peter, it's Kaz here. Were you at Supernova this year?
Yes, I was.
Now, are you guys the ones with the droid?
That was actually owned by Jason Campy. He's a mate of mine. He's a part of the R2-D2 Builders Group. And, yes, that was his R2-D2. It's a fully remote-controlled one-to-one scale R2-D2, so it was the actual size of R2. So it just goes to show just how small Kenny Baker really is.
Yes. I was a bit gutted because I didn't get a chance to get a photo with it, but I did see it went outside. It was in the building. It is really, like, fully operational. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, and I've heard stories. He's telling me that there are guys in America that they've really gone all out with their R2-D2s insofar as they've made the pop-up periscope that you see in The Empire Strikes Back when he falls in the water.
Yeah. The Dagobah system.
Yep. And also they've put in the pop-up lightsaber launcher from Return of the Jedi.
Ooh. So, does it also spit out gunk, mud?
Yeah, well, I guess you could.
Some slime from the swampy Dagobah. Yep. And does it go on tippy-toes?
Peeking
through Yoda's window.
Yeah, well, I don't think he does. Maybe that was the one of those mystical special effect ideas, I think. Yeah,
might have been Irvin Kershner, I think, with his sense of humour, which comes through in the film. Now, as to the matter of Celebration 5, or the 30th anniversary, what is Starwalking doing?
Well, for Celebration 5, nothing. But, we've got friends of ours who are going over across to enjoy a Star Wars convention. It's the biggest one in the world. And later in the year, Starwalking, along with the other Melbourne clubs of the 501st and the Rebel Legion, are involved in a dinner to help celebrate the Empire Strikes Back's 30th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Eating, though, with all that...
Eating and dancing.
With the costumes on?
Oh, yeah.
That'll be fun. Interesting.
It has been in the past, yes.
So what are some of the global activities that are actually happening for this event?
Well, all of it will be probably primarily based in America.
Mm.
The impression I've got from the guys who've gone to Celebration 4, it is huge. It's just one of those things that just, if you're a Star Wars fan and you're lucky enough to have the money available to go across to America and do it, it's just one of those things that you have to do. So, but yeah, a full-on incredible couple of days as far as I know. Yeah, it goes for at least a week.
So in your opinion, what makes The Empire Strikes Back the critical masterpiece that people say? On one side, people say that. On the other side, it's a bit divided, isn't it?
Well, it went on from Star Wars. It wasn't a rehash of the first movie. It evolved the characters, and in some ways, it really put them into the deepest, darkest hell possible. I mean, Han gets frozen into carbonite. You know, gets betrayed by his best friend. Luke, discovers that, as we said before, that Darth Vader is his father, and you know, he sort of like questioned, you know, how could this epitome of evil, you know, be my father, and just how in Star Wars, you know, the good guys had a lucky break, whereas in The Empire Strikes Back, particularly with the Battle of Hoth, you see the full might of the Empire, you know, get its payback time.
Mm.
And it's just one of those films that you think that the heroes have all the luck, but for once they don't.
Yeah, and I remember recently I rewatched, reviewed the actual original film without all the digital new effects and remastering.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it was shot slightly in the dark, even though it's, you know, it's on DVD. But it's certainly, I mean, when I saw it, I was a very, very, very small person. and basically it was harrowing because it just left you hanging, like the old-fashioned serial adventures that Lucas was actually, you know, influenced by, Buck Rogers and those sort of...
His early influences were the serials like Flash Gordon.
And Flash Gordon, that's right.
And that's what he was trying to do. And I must admit, myself personally, I remember when I went and saw The Empire Strikes Back, I said to Dad, you know, oh, they've got to make another one. They can't leave it hanging like this.
And we had to wait 3 years,
It was
a long 3 years. It actually might have been 84 when it got to New Zealand, probably 83 at the end of 83 here, but it's... Nowadays, you don't have to worry about that so much. It's so, like, simultaneously, these sort of films get released same week.
Well, it's almost a case of, due to the international dateline, that we actually get it before America sometimes.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Because I can remember, particularly with Episode 1, back in 1999, we actually, Starhawking did a midnight 12:01 a.m. screening of The Phantom Menace, and so it was 12:01 the Thursday morning here, but in America it was still the Wednesday, and it was to come out, you know, Thursday their time. So we had a good 12-ish hours on America prior to them seeing it. So you know, everyone was jumping on the emails going, "Oh, yeah, this is what happens, blah blah blah."
Spoiler alert.
So for once we got our our own back on the Americans, because you're right. I mean, with the original movies, I mean, Star Wars was, and also The Empire Strikes Back, they were all released in May for the American summer, and for Australia, I guess, in for the New Zealand,
November, December.
Yeah, we didn't get to our summer, so there was a good, you know, 4 to 6 months break between the initial release and then the local release. So you had people, you know, talking about this movie for several months prior to us actually getting it out here. So,
and so, do you have a favourite? Well, you probably have many.
You could say it's probably the most misquoted line of all. It's not Luke, "I am your father." He says, "No, I am your father." So you'd have to probably say that it was that one. "No, I am your father."
"Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you? And, well, you should not, for my ally is the Force, and a powerful ally it is. Life creates it, makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us, binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter." Oh, you know the rest of it, Peter. Go on.
Oh, God.
Go on.
Oh.
It's live radio.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, tough.
Sorry about that, but you must have... buckets
in
there.
Between the land and the ship.
Yes, that's it. Yes, even between the land and the ship.
Yep.
Between you, me, the tree, the rock, everywhere.
So, yes. Oh, God.
There's some good ones there, and it's the Zen sort of quality, I think, that kind of got people interested in a lot of things. Like, I'd hate to think how many books of, you know, that Joseph Campbell number you mentioned just a... few minutes ago. How many did they sell after this film?
Well, I guess he probably sold a hell of a lot more after Star Wars came out, when George Lucas said that one of his major inspirations was the Hero of a Thousand Faces. So,
true.
Because I mean, Luke is the archetypical golden boy,
hero.
I suppose. So,
And I believe Lucas actually met Joseph Campbell. They actually had a discussion.
I think they
in the 80s.
I also heard he sort of I think it was also late-ish 70s as well, too, after Star Wars had become such a huge hit. Mm. It's Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back and also Return of the Jedi have been so ingrained into the pop culture and psyche that everybody knows who Darth Vader is and everybody knows what a stormtrooper is. It's amazing just how popular the characters are after all these years. And as you said, when you with Supernova, I mean, every time R2-D2 came along, it was, you know, like moths to the flame.
That's great. And there's some trivia facts too, like just in things about the special effects, how they were just amazingly innovative and stuff like that. In some of the asteroids. One was actually a potato, I believe. Have you ever seen the potato asteroid?
Yes, and one of them was actually a Nike shoe.
That's right. They threw a shoe in there.
Yes.
Some of the lighting special effects were so strong that some of the models actually melted.
Wouldn't surprise me because the models were very, very simplistic, and it wouldn't surprise me with the intense heat from the lights that they were
using. Yeah, they were using back then. This was pre-CGI, of course. Mm. And H.G. Wells, I believe, War of the Worlds was a very big influence too on Lucas, particularly with the Imperial Snowwalkers.
Yes. Well, they do look a lot like the Martian walkers.
Spider-like kind of walking. Mm. Mm. Yes. So, look, I believe there's a mini convention for the science fiction minded of Melbourne this weekend.
Yes. If you're in Melbourne this weekend, at I guess you could say that the combined might of Melbourne science fiction and fantasy fandom are coming together at St David's Uniting Church at 74 Melville Road, West Brunswick. And we've been doing it now for about the last 4 or 5 years, and it's not just Star Walking, which is the Star Wars Club. We've got Oztrek, who are the Star Trek Fan Club of Victoria. Mm-hmm. We've got the Doctor Who Club of Victoria. Okay. We've got the Melbourne Science Fiction Club, who have come together, and we're having a bit of a twist on things. We're doing a Vampire Fest this weekend.
Oh, all right.
And it should be a lot of fun. So bring your fangs and bring your true blood.
All right, bring your blood orange drinks.
Yes.
Yeah, and Spaced Out, which is the LGBTIQ science fiction fan club, they'll also be there too.
They've been there the last couple of years too.
Yeah, excellent. And I'm going to be there as well. So
we'll catch up and have a bit of a yak.
To get people to sign up to become Joy members too.
Exactly.
Keep us on air. Now, there's also AussieCon coming up. Of course, that's the big monster.
That's the big convention later this year. Yep. It's the Olympics of science fiction conventions, and that's in September, September 2nd to 6th, just at the start of the footy finals. And it's at this point in time, I believe that the guest of honour is Kim Stanley Robertson, who wrote the Blue, Green and Red Mars trilogy, amongst others.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure whom else is coming up, but I believe that local science fiction author and artist Sean Tan is along as well.
Okay, yeah.
So he's coming along, but it's basically 5 days of science fiction literature fandom.
Mm, a feast, indeed.
Absolutely.
And finally, before we let you go, how can people find out about Star Walking? Are you on? You're on the internet, obviously.
Yep, Star Walking. We're at all the W's, starwalking.net, and Star Walking does have its own Facebook page as well. Mm-hmm. So if you want to jump on Facebook and look for Star Walking, and our next club meeting is on June the 12th at Whitley College.
Okay. Which is where? Sorry, I'm ignorant.
It's in Parkville.
Parkville.
Basically, it's stone's throw from the zoo or Princess Park, and it's $8 to get in for non-members and $5 for members, and it's from 1 till 5 p.m. And come along and join in with some fellow Star Wars fans, and we also get the guys from the other clubs as well. So it's not just Star Wars, but it's a mishmash of everything.
Great. And just before we end that on that note, the big question, you said to me over the phone last week that there would be an announcement regarding Star Wars during Celebration 5 this year. What's your gut feeling of what that might be?
That's a very good question. Gut feeling, well, there's about half a dozen things. I guess probably that the big one would be finally announcing the Star Wars live-action TV show. That's been on the boil for a couple of years now, and there's talk about it being filmed in Australia, possibly at Fox Studios up in Sydney. The only other things that whispers that I've been hearing are that possibly Star Wars being finally released on Blu-ray, and also the talk of Star Wars, and I'm not sure about any of the other films at this stage, but at least Star Wars being released in the cinemas in 3D.
Ooh.
So, obviously, Avatar has raised the benchmark, just like Star Wars did back in 1977. So, fingers crossed, we'll see what happens when Lucasfilm announced the big thing.
Yes. Well, when do you think that will be? Is that going to be in September?
That will probably be at the Celebration 5, yeah.
Okay.
So they won't mention anything until Celebration 5. So until then, your guess is as good as mine, and we can all anticipate.
Yes, sort of like the cliffhanger, the end of Empire Strikes Back, isn't it? We're all like frozen in carbonite until that.
We're all okay. No!
No. All right, the choice, Wookiee or Wampa?
Choice, Wookiee or Wampa? Wookiees know how to fly spaceships, but their stomach gets them into trouble. If you watch Return of the Jedi, when you see them get sprung in the trap, that was Chewie's stomach that did that.
Yes.
But a Wampa... Yeah, it can take down a Tauntaun. So I'd probably have to say a Wampa.
A Wampa.
Yep.
All right.
And a polar bear, a Hoth.
Yeah. A little bit more interesting than Lost episodes, but look.
I must admit, if I saw a Wampa on the deserted island, I'd freak.
I think so. I'd be wondering what was in the water. All right. Look, Peter Jordan, thank you from Starwalking. Thank you so much for coming on the show on Sci-Fi and Scream tonight.
Thank you, Sonia. Thank you so much for inviting me. Everybody, yeah, it's been a blast, and we'll come along to the Minicon on Saturday and we'll have a bit of a yak.
Yep, we'll catch up with you then.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
We'll see you soon.
All right, thank you.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Thank you. And we have got an SMS message here. One of the quotes, afraid you will be. I think it goes, you will be, and it's actually Yoda, as far as I'm aware. Thanks for that, Robert. Okay, you're listening to Sonia and Kaz on the lightboard panel there on Sci-Fi and Scream tonight on Joy 94.9. Sci-Fi and Scream news. Hasbro releases Star Wars Empire Strikes Back anniversary line. Of course, the big news of 2010 is the 30th anniversary of Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. And naturally, Hasbro has gone crazy with their line of Star Wars-related merchandise, designed to take you back to childhood and the good old days. Relive the first time you saw the film with your very own Boba Fett helmet, or to a lesser extent, relive Revenge of the Sith as you twirl your own General Grievous lightsaber. Along with all those goodies, there will, of course, be a shedload of Lego.
And Concorde is to star in Men in Black 3. Flight of the Conchords star Jemaine Clement is set to play a bad guy called Boris in Men in Black 3, according to the Hollywood Reporter's Heat Vision blog. The long-awaited tricycle will take place mainly in 1969, with Josh Brolin, oddly enough, playing a young Agent K. Tommy Lee Jones will play the character in scenes that bookend the film. Despite the time shift, Will Smith is back on board to star as Agent J. Barry Sonnenfeld will once again direct, with the film set to be released in May 2012. Clement's character, Boris, is described as charming and creepy at the same time, which is kind of a bit of what Flight of the Conchords is, really.
Ghost Whisperer cancelled, Medium renewed. In a surprise move, US TV network CBS has axed Ghost Whisperer and renewed Medium for the 2010-11 TV series. Both had performed fairly well for the network in a difficult Friday night time slot, but it seems Medium's slightly more weird and gory shenanigans have the nod over the sentimentality of Ghost Whisperer.
And there are no more Heroes. Sad but unsurprising news, NBC has cancelled Heroes. However, fans of the show, about a group of humans endowed with incredible powers, should keep their hopes alive. The Hollywood Reporter says that the network confirmed rumours that it will talk with the show's creator, Tim Kring, about the possibility of a Heroes TV movie to wrap things up. So there's a little bit of a silver lining there.
Uh-huh.
Apollo joins Outcasts. Battlestar Galactica's Jamie Bamber is back on TV, and it looks like he'll get to use his English accent this time. Hurrah! He's been cast in the new BBC America series, Outcast, a sci-fi series about survivors from a destroyed Earth and their drive for power, politics and sex as they settle in on a new planet. The sci-fi soap was created by Spook's Ben Richards and is a British-American co-production.
That sounds good. Another TV show coming to ABC One this time is Misfits. It's set to air on ABC One. It's a British live-action superhero comedy drama about a group of young offenders forced to work in a community service program where they become imbued with supernatural powers after a strange electrical storm. Kelly becomes telepathic. Curtis can rewind time, of course. Alicia can send people into a sexual frenzy when they touch her skin. Ooh. And Simon can make himself invisible. The show has been critically acclaimed in Britain and is in the same vein as the darkly comic and very wonderful Being Human.
That sounds really good.
It looks great.
Actually, I've seen some of the previews.
Yeah, been waiting for it to come to Australia for a while now.
Cool. Doctor Who live tour is announced. With spin-offs such as the Sarah Jane Adventures and Torchwood, plus the Doctor Who video game on the way, it seems there's no stopping the runaway success of the BBC's enigmatic Time Lord. On the back of the current wave of Who-mania, BBC Worldwide has announced Doctor Who Live, a touring show which will bring the series' music, special effects and monsters to arenas all over the UK. Doctor Who is the new rock and roll. The show will begin on the 8th of October and has been created in conjunction with the television show's executive producer, Stephen Moffat. Sadly, there are no plans to bring the show to Australia's fair shores, but you can never tell.
No, I've got high hopes that it may hit Australia, but I'm not holding my breath.
Would be good to see some of those sports stadiums used for something more intellectual.
Something more geeky as opposed to sport and rock concerts.
Yeah. Definitely.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Sonia and Kaz. So we've been talking today with Peter Jordan from Starwalking, and we also spoke to Declan Green, who was the playwright of Moth, which you actually went and saw, Sonia, and you enjoyed the play?
I did enjoy it. I wouldn't call it enjoy, but yeah, I got a lot from it. It was very, very moving piece.
It's great
to see.
Highly
physical piece.
Yeah, it is great to see that kind of theatre. I mean, great to see that kind of theatre hitting Melbourne, but Australia in particular. Mm. Next week, we are going to talk about all things
sci-fi and the XY of sci-fi, men in science fiction, and Kaz and Byron will be at the helm or the command centre of Sci-Fi and Squeam next week.
Yeah, we thought we'd get the expert on sci-fi hunks.
Yeah. I was going to say something else, but, but hunks. In a good way, in a nice politically correct way. And that's pretty much the end of tonight's show, where we looked into the heart of teen depression and angst, and we also looked at the 30th anniversary of Number 5, The Empire Strikes Back, on Sci-Fi and Squeam and only on Joy 94.9.
That's right. We've got The Frequency coming up next with Adam Barillet.
Mm-hmm. And he's looking at local performance up close. So stay tuned to Joy 94.9 and may the force be with you.
Sci-Fi and Squeam was synthesized and squashed into shape by Sonia, Albert and Kaz. For more information, visit our Facebook page, Sci-Fi and Squeam, or check out joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.